What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report with not John Iadarola today. John Iadarola. His name is John Iadarola from now on. It's me, Francesca Fiorentini, back at you. Very excited to be hosting today and tomorrow. Sorry, guys. Thank you so much for being here, of course. And we got a lot of news to cover, so I'm very, very grateful that we have with me contributor to Rebel HQ and also host of the podcast Modern Context, Yasmin Khan. Yasmin, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here, Francesca.
Happy to be here. I have to shout out for just half a second, Yas, because on Sunday, the reason I wasn't here yesterday is because on Sunday I was in Sacramento, California. It's probably why I don't have a voice anymore, although I didn't have a voice before then. I think I'm ill. And I was performing at the Sacramento Punchline. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of Dragon Squad members out in SAC. So just a salute, a hello, a fire breathing. I love you to everyone who came out to see me and my husband, Matt. So cool. It was so fun. Everyone was so gracious. People wore their TYT gear. There were lots of chants of Free Palestine, as of course there should be. Dragon Squad rolling deep in Sactown. Thank you guys so much. And thank you for all the work that you're doing. There's a lot of local activists there, of course, since it's the capital of California, and a lot of do nothing centrist Democrats. So anyway, it was so good, but we got a lot to get to. Obviously, court cases, actual anti-Semitism coming out of Trump's mouth. What? And then what happened to those Canadians that moved to Russia? Remember them? They were trying to escape woke Canada. We have some updates on their plight and they need money. So does Lauren Boebert, as it turns out. And then a Laken Riley, the woman whose death has been used basically to score political points and to come down on immigrants. Her dad is speaking out and he is not happy with the GOP. So if you're here, you know what to do. You're liking the stream, you're sharing the stream right now. But with all that, Yasmin, are you ready?
I'm very ready. Let's do this.
We know she is. She's a pro. I'm very excited because where I will fail, Yasmin shall shine.
We're a team. We're a good team. Yeah,
we'll be. But let's start with this. There are some big developments in the hush money trial. That is Donald Trump's hush money trial, where he funneled money to a former porn star who he slept with in order to keep her quiet about said affair, and funneled it through his personal fixer, Michael Cohen. Remember this one? This is like the OG case. And it is, in fact, a criminal trial, not just a civil one, as we have seen in a lot of his other cases. There might be jail time involved. So wherever you stand, wherever you put this one, I used to have a Stormy Daniels 2020 t-shirt. Personally, I stand real hard for Ms. Daniels, but there are some developments, and specifically Donald Trump wanted to prevent Ms. Daniels from testifying in this case that she's relevant in, as well as Michael Cohen, prevent him from testifying. That didn't go down so well with the judge. No, the New York judge on Monday denied Donald Trump's bid to keep his former lawyer Michael Cohen and adult film star Stormy Daniels from testifying in the former president's criminal trial related to a 2016 hush money payment. The judge in this case is Judge Merchan. He placed some restrictions on Daniels, one being that she can't testify about a 2018 lie detector test that she took. But on Trump's former fixer, Michael Cohen, he can testify to anything he wants and his role in this scheme, again, to pay Daniels off. Trump didn't want either of them to testify, which is ridiculous. I would have put some restrictions on Stormy Daniels in terms of how much she can describe Trump's junk, because don't nobody want to hear that. There's a little bit more, but Yasmin, on this stuff, I mean, this is like one of the biggest, this is one of the biggest cases facing Donald Trump, and he tried to prevent two of the witnesses who were involved in it from actually testifying. He's losing that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so a lot going on for Trump right now. I remember when this whole thing first came out with Stormy Daniels forever ago, and people were saying that this woman might actually be the one to take Trump down, whatever that meant at the time. But then she sort of died down. The story died down in the press, but now she is back with this. The story never actually went away. The thing to remember about this trial is that it's happening at a crucial time for Trump as well. He is the nominee for the Republican Party. He's going to be on the ballot in November. He needs to be campaigning right now. And this Trump, not this Trump, this trial is going to really take him off of the campaign trail. So he's going to need to get a little creative on how he goes forth. And then also keep in mind that Michael Cohen, who he's trying to prevent or was trying to prevent from actually testifying on the stand, he's already served jail time for his involvement in this particular crime.
Absolutely. And so he's going to try and get off on something that his fixer already served time for, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michael Cohen is kind of a, you know, he's a loose cannon, but at least he had a little bit of integrity, unlike, well, we're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani, but a little bit of a refresher. Again, this case was brought by, well, wasn't brought by, but is being overseen now by the DA Alvin Bragg in Manhattan. And it alleges that Trump falsified business records to hide money he was paying to Cohen to reimburse him for $130,000 Cohen paid to Daniels in the closing days of the 2016 presidential campaign. Again, to keep her quiet about their relationship. Another loss in this case, and this is sort of in the legal weeds, but it's interesting, is just his entire defense around this case, because Merchan didn't sign off on what is known as a partial advice of counsel defense. What that means is the advice of counsel defense means that you can say, oh, I was just following the advice of my counsel, of my lawyer, in this case, Michael Cohen. But when you claim that, you also waive attorney-client privileges and expose the communication you had with that lawyer to the defendant. So in this case, to the state of New York, or to the city of Manhattan, I guess, more specifically. And they didn't actually claim defense of advice of counsel. Trump's attorneys said they planned to argue their client didn't think he was doing anything wrong paying Cohen back in transactions that were listed as legal fees because of his, quote, awareness that lawyers had been involved in the talks. They said Trump wasn't asserting a formal advice of counsel defense, which, as I mentioned, would entitle prosecutors to more information about his communications with his attorneys. Merchan said Monday he was rejecting that defense, again, the judge, finding that if he didn't, it essentially would have allowed Trump to get benefits of the advice of counsel defense without the obligations that come with it. And you can imagine he wants to hide all of the communications with Michael Cohen, or any other lawyers that he consulted on this, because they probably would show that, yeah, the dude hid money on purpose. Like, he back-channeled this in order to, again, put his thumb on the scale when it came to the election. However, there is a small win on this, which I guess is a win for all of us who don't want to hear this at all anymore. Trump had a success in Merchant's filing, another piece of evidence he argued should be kept out of the trial, which was the Access Hollywood tape. In a 2005 hot mic audio, remember, Trump could be heard saying he can grope women without their consent. Merchant said prosecutors can elicit testimony on the tape that contains comments of a sexual nature, but they can't enter the tape as evidence, which it's not really relevant in this case, Yaz. Like, in my opinion, that tape is more relevant in the E. Jean Carroll tape, trial, which he already lost a million times over. Again, a civil trial. But just on where this all goes, it's not clear when the trial is going to start. It was scheduled for March 25th, but Merchan on Friday postponed it until at least mid-April, after federal prosecutors in Manhattan belatedly turned over more than 100,000 documents relating to Cohen's role in the case. That's a lot of sifting. Look, I don't do law, but I read a few pages before I fall asleep every night, and that seems just like a lot to go through. There is a hearing scheduled for next week to discuss the matter in terms of when it's going to actually start. But yes, I mean, this could be the thing. It seems so small in relation to some of these bigger things, but hell, man, get him on anything you can. And I still doubt that he's ever going to see the inside of a jail cell, unlike Peter Navarro, who I believe today has to report to prison.
What a day. I didn't realize that was today. That's a
beautiful
fun
day.
I agree with you, though. I don't think that Trump will ever see the inside of a jail cell. I would be very, very surprised if he actually does end up in a jail. But that said, he could still lose this case, right? And then there could be other penalties against him. I also agree with you that the Access Hollywood tape is a damning piece of some kind of incriminating evidence, but it's not specifically relevant to this case. And another thing that I want to point out, and you kind of touched on it, is that there is a distinction. This is a case about falsified documents. It's not about Stormy Daniels, even though it keeps being brought up and mentioned as the Stormy Daniels case. She's not the one suing Trump. This is about false documents.
Yes.
And the defense argument about, you know, how Trump was just trying to take the advice of someone like Michael Cohen. He was just following what his lawyers told him to do. It sounds sort of like the Fox News defense whenever he was, Fox was trying to say, we didn't lie. We were just saying what other people who were lying was saying, and we were reporting on that. So it's like an indirect way of trying to evade accountability. But hopefully the judges will see through all of that.
Yeah, and we're gonna get Stormy Daniels back on the stand. I mean, she's been through a lot, and I have to say, like, we're in a very different world than we were in.
She's been through a lot. That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
I mean, number one, had the misfortune of deciding to sleep with Donald Trump, but then, you know, everything else. And again, we're just in a different world than we would be in the 90s when it's like, oh, a porn star in political life, you know, and like with a politician, like she would have been destroyed. And yes, the right has tried to destroy her, but she is very much doing the opposite and sort of owning her own power. She's like using this to tour. Like honestly, I stand Stormy Daniels. I like her a lot. I know she's been through a lot, and I wish her nothing but the best, almost just personally. We've seen what E. Jean Carroll has been through. Stormy Daniels is kind of the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, of all of this. But anyway, we shall see. We'll be on this story. We got to move though, because more, just if it wasn't bloodbath, it's something else that Donald Trump is going to say, something of course. And he does this a lot, specifically lots of thoughts on Jewish Americans. Let's jump into this.
Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I actually think they hate Israel.
Yes.
I don't think they hate him. I think they hate Israel. When you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that. And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel. Now, any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
Any Jew who votes for Democrats, which, mind you, Jewish Americans overwhelmingly vote Democrat, hate themselves and hate their religion. Tight, tight, tight. Yep. I'm sure we'll just have to pretend that the right is serious about tackling anti-Semitism when their candidate for president says things like this. And he's done this a lot. I mean, it's been overt stuff about, you know, speaking about Jews and money. The same, you know, when Ilhan Omar talks about the actual Israeli lobby, she has to apologize. Donald Trump can say whatever he wants and be way actually anti-Semitic. But those remarks, I think, are really telling. I want to get into my thoughts, but before I do, there was a response from the Biden campaign about that, which I thought was important. It's good to not let these comments just slide. Let's go to graphic two. This is from Sam Stein saying, campaign spokesperson James Singer saying, the only person who should be ashamed here is Donald Trump. Donald Trump openly demeans Jewish Americans and reportedly thinks Adolf Hitler, quote, did some good things. He has said the only people he wants counting his money are short guys wearing yarmulkes. My bad, I hate that spelling. Can never do it. And praise neo-Nazis who chanted Jews will not replace us as very fine people. Yeah, thank you. And this is like, anyway, we'll get into what I think, but specifically, let's talk about that Schumer piece. Trump said Chuck Schumer hates Israel. He absolutely, because Chuck Schumer recently spoke out about Bibi Netanyahu's handling of this assault on Gaza, now 6 months in, and 31 conservative estimate, 31,000 civilians killed. Trump took particular issue with those comments from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the country's highest ranking Jewish official. In a speech last week, Schumer sharply criticized Netanyahu's handling of the war, warning that the civilian toll was damaging Israel's standing in the world. He also called for Israel to hold new elections. Right. So kind of a pretty bold stance for someone like Chuck Schumer, who absolutely has been supportive of everything that Israel does, no matter the occupation, no matter the previous starvation of Gazans and prevention of medicine into that territory, you know, because of the blockade. But Yaz, this to me is so indicative of how there are open anti-Semites who supposedly love Israel, and how those things actually and ironically are not mutually exclusive, and that some of the greatest supposed allies of Netanyahu and Israel are actually rabid anti-Semites, and they consistently use Israel as a way to discipline Jewish Americans in this country into thinking one way, into voting one way. And that is, I think, the height of anti-Semitism.
There is so much to unpack. Anytime Gaza and Israel is brought up, like, there's just so much to talk about. First of all, the Democrats do not hate Israel, at least not if you're referring to the congressional or even federal level Democrats. President Biden even called himself a Zionist at one point. The most that the Democrats have done to condemn Israel thus far, it was the very, very recent episode that you just mentioned, when Schumer said that Netanyahu may have gone a little too far in his response against Hamas. Allegedly, his alleged response against Hamas. And what's interesting about this is what you mentioned, you know, the narrative is being muddled on the right. Trump is trying to use this as an opportunity to, you know, swing over some Jewish voters to the Republican side. And as you mentioned, the Jewish people are overwhelmingly Democratic in this country. And I have to assume that that's at least part of the reason why elected Democrats have been so slow to condemn Israel, part of the reason. But it would be a hard flip for Jewish people in the United States to vote for the Republicans, especially for a guy like Trump, because he has such a demonstrated history of making anti-Semitic comments and for supporting anti-Semitic people who have also made anti-Semitic comments, and for, you know, not really condemning whenever we would see anti-Semitic hate crimes across the country, like the synagogue shooting and things like that.
Yes,
so it is a hard sell for Trump to be like, oh, the Democrats hate the Jews. It's just not true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think it is indicative of the far right in Israel, which I know a lot of American Jews have massive critiques of, but they also have critiques of, you know, the ongoing occupation and the fact that this latest round of assault on Gaza is part and parcel of a plan of broader ethnic cleansing and a plan of recolonization. Just today, we don't have a clip, but Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, was speaking at Harvard, basically saying that the people of Gaza, like, who cares? You know, borders change all the time, which is basically a reference to Israel should and might and will expand its borders. And secondly, he said, there's great waterfront property, a lot of money to be made in Gaza. This is the same line that the right is echoing in Israel. Mind you, this is the guy tasked with peace in the Middle East in the year 2016. To say nothing of his lack of qualifications, this is how far he's willing to go. So it is very difficult, as you said, because Democrats are 1,000,000%, at least the large majority of them, not squad members, not the people who've called for ceasefire, support whatever Israel does and does not see a problem with continuing to arm this, what I would call genocide. Yeah. But then you look at Donald Trump and you look at Jared Kushner and you're like, yeah, it actually can get even just a little bit worse, because there is no veneer of we would like a two-state solution. We would like peace. We need to let aid in. Now, I think a lot of people out there would argue with me and say, well, Francesca, Biden might be different from Trump, but he's not actually doing anything different. He might be saying different things, but he's still greenlighting hundreds of weapons deliveries without congressional approval to Israel and to Netanyahu, he supposedly wants to not be prime minister anymore. I mean, it's just wild. Like, it is truly, I feel like we live in the upside down with this issue. But yes, the crassness with which Donald Trump speaks about this and his son-in-law speaks about this shows us that actually, if Trump were in power, this would be all the more sinister.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that you just made, because I mean, I'm not in any way defending President Biden's response to any of this, but I will say that saying certain things out loud is very damaging as opposed to just doing them. And the thing is, over time, a narrative is what converts people's minds, right? It's what convinces people to think one way versus another way. And the US government especially and the Israeli government, they do a lot of things that the American people aren't aware of. So the things that are said publicly and the things that are reported on, those things matter immensely.
Yeah.
And I mean, President Biden is doing what he's doing or not doing what a lot of people think he should be doing. He hasn't called for a ceasefire officially, not for a total ceasefire. No. He hasn't really condemned Netanyahu as much as a lot of people would like for him to. But he is a little bit better, at least as far as what Trump is doing, which is going on talking about, you know, making very anti-Semitic comments, not just now, but throughout, you know, a lot of his public life, at least as a political candidate. So I think between that and then there's also what Jared Kushner was saying, there is a narrative issue that they're struggling with here, right? Because there's the geopolitical goals of the governments of both the US and Israel. But then there's also, they have to sell it to the public, right? And saying, oh, we want that land for ourselves for whatever reason. Let's say it's oil. Let's just say for fun that it's oil. There's that geopolitical goal, but they can't outright say that because a lot of the American people aren't going to buy that, right? So they have to say, well, you know, it's fine because borders change all the time. Never mind all the people that have to die in order for that border to change. Never mind the fact that we are deliberately killing people and rehoming people so those borders can change.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of complicity to go around on both sides on this. But yeah, well, obviously we're going to continue to talk about this. Continue to talk about the imminent starvation, specifically of the people in northern Gaza. There's also an invasion of Rafah, again, the last city in the south of Gaza on the border of Egypt, and an Israeli invasion there. So don't let this fall from headlines, folks. And I encourage everyone to stay and get involved. And just speaking for me, continue to call your electeds. Let's take our first break though. A lot more, including Lauren Bobo, who needs Momo money. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I am Francesca Fiorentini with Yasmin Khan in for John Iadarola. But so much more news. We would do what John would do, which is cover the right so incessantly that it actually blinds you. It like you go blind in half an eye. So here we go.
Lauren, you're going to do fantastically in your district. Lauren Boebert, thank you.
President Donald J. Trump has endorsed America First warrior Lauren Boebert for Congress. Trump says Congresswoman Boebert is a proven conservative who has led the fight to stop illegal immigration, defend the Second Amendment, and stand up to the radical Democrats who want to destroy our country. We need Lauren fighting for us in Washington. Stand with President Trump and vote Lauren Boebert for Congress.
I'm Lauren Boebert, and I approve this message.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I would have gone with the one where she's actually just like vaping next to a pregnant lady and is like, whatever, like that feels more MAGA to me, but okay, you can go real traditional with it. This is Congresswoman, for now, Lauren Boebert's new ad that she recently put out because she is running for not re-election, election, because she's in a new district, guys. She switched districts. She was in the third. Now she's in the fourth because she's running scared. And she put out this tweet with that ad. She said, I need your help getting this ad in front of every voter in Colorado's fourth district. President Trump has entrusted me with his complete and total endorsement. And you know that I'll be working with every step of the way to save America. Donate here and let's get this in front of every voter. So initially I was like, you're not going to get this in front of voters if you just retweet it. Nobody's actually on Twitter. You realize X isn't real life. But I think she might actually just be trying to raise money to like air it on, I don't know, a public access station at like 3 in the morning. But yes, this is her bid. She's broke. Lauren Boebert then tweeting, it's Monday, we're going to do a MAGA Monday money bomb. As you know, I'm in the fight of my political career in Colorado's scratch out third, fourth district. The establishment has done all they can to take me out, and without the funds to fight back, they just might win. Even if it's $5 or $10, click the link and donate to my campaign. Yeah, things are not looking good for Lauren Boebert in the third district. The straw poll was, another straw poll was conducted just earlier this month on March 3rd after Trump endorsed her, and she struggled once again, struggling against the competition, placing third behind former state senator and Logan County Commissioner Jerry Sonnenberg and veteran state lawmaker Ted Harvey. The poll sample size was around 180 debate attendees, which could be considered too low to be representative of broader trends. Okay, so maybe just 180 people. Yes, but I think it's really interesting. She did this move, and now she's running against, in her words, the establishment, right? Because you can't say Democrats because they're Republicans. But it's more of a crowded Republican field than in the third, which it seemed like her greatest threat was from Adam Frisch, like the Democrat. But I don't know, thoughts.
Yeah, so she was running in District 3 and she barely won her reelection campaign in the last election that she had. And that was against Adam Frisch, who is now the favored to win in this coming election. So what she did is she jumped districts, as you know, to District 4, which is a very red district. But Ken Buck also, as we know, threw her for a loop whenever he stepped down early. So now she's in a really, really tough position where she could give up her current seat in District 3 and run for the special election to take over that seat, or she could just continue on her path and keep her District 3 seat and continue to run for District 4 in this coming November election. And either way, she's not really likely to win. She's likely to lose any seat in Congress at the end of all of this. So she is in a tough position, but like not really, a little bit. The people in District 4, her new district, they don't like her. They don't trust her. They think she's too much drama. They think that she is opportunistic, and that's why she jumped over. And she's talking a lot of smack about the people of District 3, which is like, you know, a boyfriend or a guy talking about negatively about his ex-girlfriend or something like that. So it's not a great look. On top of that, she's saying that, you know, she can't even go to a theater without somebody putting it on the internet. It's an invasion of her privacy, which is not what happened, right? She didn't just go to a theater. She did some things, a few different things. She was vaping, which you mentioned, but then she was also engaging in improper sexual conduct with somebody. And she's mad about that particular incident because a lot of her voters or would-be voters saw that as, you know, blatant hypocrisy, because this whole time, despite her politics, she's always tried to portray herself as at least a Christian woman with Christian values. And then that one incident is costing her quite a bit because it's showing that she doesn't actually hold those values. And the people of District 4 already think she's a lot of drama, and she's trying to disprove that. But ever since that came out, she's been involved in a lot of drama.
I thank you for that context, because I had missed the special election. So special election's in June. Mm-hmm. And arguably, whoever wins the special election is going to also win in November. You don't imagine that a different person. So she's got to put her name in the hat for June. Anyone would.
Also, the Colorado primary is in June. So she's really gunning for June right now. And then if she wins that, then she would go on to November.
Right. So either way, but again, no one's switching courses unless some massive infusion of money. But June to November, that's not enough time. We assume again that whoever wins in, but yes, it wild, wild stuff. Meanwhile, however, there's some good news. Little Boebert, Lauren Boebert's office, which yes, she has an office. I don't know which preteens are underpaid to staff it, but they put out this press release. Representative Boebert secures over $20 million for Colorado water and infrastructure projects. Ha ha. And then she wrote, I'm thrilled that Colorado communities in the third world receive more than $20 million to get 10 local water and infrastructure projects off the ground. It includes important federal resources for new water storage, improving water quality, funding water treatment plants, building new water supply lines, reducing congestion on the I-70, and building roads and bridges. I'm grateful to all the local stakeholders who brought these important projects to my attention and that worked with my team and I throughout this process to ensure that 10 out of 10 of our requests were successfully funded in public law. Can't wait for the ribbon cutting and to see these priorities come to fruition. And yet, how did this happen? How did Colorado's third get the money to do these projects to sound like they're important? Clean water, that's good. It was from a spending bill, a federal spending bill that actually Lauren Boebert didn't vote for. This was her back in March, earlier, just a couple weeks ago, saying there's hashtag swamp omnibus maintains COVID spending levels, funds the Green New Deal. No, I wish either of those things were true and excludes nearly all conservative policy writers we fought for. No wonder Democrats are ramming this monstrosity through before Sleepy Joe takes the stage tomorrow. That's, I guess, the State of the Union. The real question is, why are Republicans letting them know we're better than this? It seems as she did not actually, according to Business Insider, did not vote for this omnibus spending. Again, remember, Lauren Boebert is on the wing of the Republican Party that refuses to fund the government because we're not putting spikes and alligators at the border. Like that's, so she's again holding up these water projects for her district because what? But again, they went through and it's just the height of hypocrisy, which is why, in my opinion, Yaz, I think she's going to end up as just a lead anchor at Newsmax.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing she's good at, it's spinning the truth. So this came out when it was reported, you know, because this is something that she voted against. And then she was very quick to take credit for it on Twitter or X. And now she's doing it again. And this is a really interesting way of operating, right? And the Republicans do it a lot. We see it, you know, especially Jim Jordan is particularly good at this, where they just really don't do anything for their constituents. They don't pass bills. They don't actually support anything helpful for their constituents. And yet they continue to get reelected and they continue to serve in Congress. However, they're doing that. So with Lauren Boebert in this particular instance, she was able to maintain her rhetoric while voting against this. But then whenever something good actually happened for her constituents, a good thing that she voted against, she was able to take credit for it, saying, oh, look at this good thing that happened. I'm in Congress, so I helped do this. Yeah. And she knows that a lot of the people who vote for her or would vote for her probably aren't going to dig too deeply into what actually happened and how responsible she was and actually how much she fought against this thing for her people. So, you know, I guess it's kind of a win-win for her, but it's very easy to look at that paper trail and see that she didn't actually do anything here.
Not at all. And, you know, Joe Biden's also tried to use this against Republicans. And I think that's really good. State of the Union, he was like, you guys didn't even vote for it. I think he should have gone harder. I think you name them by name. You got a water project. You got a new bridge. You got, like, talk about, you know, what was in this omnibus spending plan. Talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. Talk about all the ways that your administration has actually helped Republican districts. But we don't have that kind of president. Let's move on to this. And again, I apologize in advance for subjecting you to this.
I'd be a winner. Not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself.
So that clip is upsetting for a million reasons, one of which is because President Biden says the word illegals, which he later apologized for. But Marjorie Greene had this outburst in the middle of the State of the Union address talking about the murder of Laken Riley. And Laken Riley was a 22-year-old nursing student who was jogging and was killed by an undocumented immigrant from Venezuela. Authorities say he entered the country in 2022 illegally. But of course, that doesn't matter. All that matters in the case of Laken Riley is that she was murdered by an undocumented immigrant or a quote illegal. Let's wear a pin with her name on it. Marjorie Greene has a pin with her face on it. She has a shirt that says "Say her name," which again, if you guys are following news at all in the last 5 years, "Say her name" was about Breonna Taylor. It was about the many innocent, unarmed Black Americans and women who are killed by police every single year. But of course, because she's a troll, she usurps this phrase, puts it on a shirt. Now, the real story is this. What does Laken Riley's family make of the fact that their daughter is being turned into a political prop to score points? Her father has something to say about that. Take a look.
Do you think a difference in immigration policy would have made a difference for Laken?
We have no idea if that would have changed anything, but he's here illegally, that he might not have been here had we had secure borders. I feel like she's being used somewhat politically.
How do you feel about that?
It makes me angry. She was much better than that. She should be raised up for the person that she is.
So there he goes. And again, this is a guy, you heard him. He said maybe the immigration laws would have changed that. But also, I feel like she's being used. Clearly, this is a man who lost his daughter. He is not thinking about politics. He clearly does not seem like he has some sort of agenda. He's calling it like he sees it. And like he sees it is, yeah, maybe we need to have some changes at the border. But also, let's go to graphic two. Also, this. Just the former president holding up a poster that says, "Say her name." And then "I love you, Laken," written, I guess, by Donald Trump and signed by Donald Trump. I mean, and that those are posts on Truth Social. There's a lot of posts about Laken Riley. In fact, here's a whole little fun little quilt. If any MAGA folks are watching, they want to turn that into a graphic. Donald Trump going off about crooked Joe Biden, Laken Riley, God bless Laken Riley and her family. Here's a meme. "The blood of Laken Riley is on the hands of Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas. Laken Riley was a spectacular young woman who shouldn't have been taken from us." And yet, when it comes to the border, who's the one who tanked the border bill? It was Donald Trump. Donald Trump. And he, in fact, said that, quote, "Blame it on me." Trump appears to boast about working to sink the border bill. That was from CNN just after the border bill was tanked, graphic four, but that's okay, take it from me. Donald Trump, and we know this, was working behind the scenes to make sure that the border bill that Biden proposed, which was bipartisan, which as a progressive, I had a lot of problems with, but was seen as, you know, an olive branch to the right. Donald Trump didn't want that to pass, even though it was bipartisan and mostly supported by the likes of Katie Britt. Remember, overacting housewife Katie Britt supported that bill and also went on his entire untrue rant about undocumented immigrants. And Trump was the one who behind the scenes said, no, Republicans, don't pass that. Wait till I become president again, and then we can pass it together. I don't want to give Joe Biden any wins, but I will post many memes and take photos with Laken's family while actively trying to undermine what could have saved her life. Yaz, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you specifically look for data to support whatever point it is that you're trying to make, you will find that data. But that doesn't mean that you should discard all the other evidence that disproves your point. And in this case, that point being that illegal immigrants are the primary arbiters of violence against Americans. We know that that is literally not true. It's just not true. The data supports it. But, you know, if you're a politician, you get to cherry pick and you get to publicize whatever it is that best supports your effort to get voted in by the American people. And I think at this point, there's very little that any politician on any side could say or do that would not feel very cheesy and contrived to me. Everything they do and say is in the pursuit of political victory and political support. This is all obviously opportunistic. It's obviously disingenuous. Everyone is obviously trying to win an election in November. And none of it is actually being done in the best interests of the American people. If these politicians had any actual compassion for the American people, as you said, they would be voting for things that would help them. Lauren Boebert would have voted for the water bill because it would have helped the people in her district. And Trump would have voted or would have at least supported some kind of solution at the border that wouldn't involve, you know, chasing down immigrants on horseback, which is what we've been seeing here in Texas. So there's a lot of things that politicians say and do, but they just like to maintain a narrative point because it's good for voting, it's good for campaigning. So they're not actually looking to fix things or change things because, you know, this is what's going to bring people to the polls in November.
100%. And he is not the first time he's used the death of an American citizen at the hands of someone who's undocumented. Again, by the way, 11 million undocumented Americans here in this country. Yes, I'm calling them Americans. They work every single day. They pay taxes. Oh, they don't receive Social Security benefits. Yet if we had to survive a single day without them, the country would fall apart. But remember back in 2016, he talked about Catherine Steinle. Catherine Steinle was a woman who was killed by someone who didn't have papers on a pier in San Francisco. This man found a gun. The gun went off in his hands. He found a gun at the pier. It went off in his hands and it happened to kill this woman, and it was a tragedy all around. Donald Trump could not stop talking about that. So again, I'm not convinced, as Yaz is saying, there is no evidence to support that undocumented folks commit more crimes than actual Americans with papers. There is no evidence to bear that out. And yet the right continues to try to say that narrative. And so we have to continue to push back against it. I think we have to take our second break. But when we come back, we got some good hits, including Jesus sponsoring prayer. What's going on? Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here, Yasmin Khan there. A few more stories before we jump into that aftermath. Donald Trump is now the nominee for president, obviously, for the Republican Party. And a lot of you are like, who's going to be left to staff Donald's campaign? What friends does he have? Who has he not burned through? Who does he not owe money to? Turns out to be one man. He's an OG, not John Bolton, but you can see him next to me. One of those photos, he's actually in handcuffs. Paul Manafort, that's right. Donald Trump is expected to reenlist Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager. He pardoned as his campaign advisor later this year. Manafort, again, worked for Donald Trump in 2016 before he was ousted and later convicted of tax and bank fraud felonies as a part of Robert Mueller's investigation into the Russian interference in the 2016 election. Paul Manafort was sort of the guy that kicked all of this off. He, along with a couple others, were learned to be Michael Flynn, were like, you know, they're like active Russian agents. They've lobbied on behalf of the Russian government. Now they're at the right hand of the current president. This could be problematic. And it turned out after this investigation by Mueller, Manafort was one of the casualties. He served 47 months in prison. He got gout. That's just something I remember from him. But what's the job? He's back. He was pardoned. Dusting off his shoulders. The job discussions have largely centered on the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee in July and could include Manafort playing a role in fundraising for the presumptive GOP nominee's campaign. Lord knows he needs it. According to these people who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe private deliberations. While no formal decision has been made, the four people described the hiring as expected and said Trump was determined to bring Manafort back into the fold. I just can't. Anyway, Trump apparently has told advisors that he feels loyal to Manafort because he served prison time, and that Manafort has continued to stay loyal and praise Trump in public and private appearances. The former president still often complains about the Mueller investigation, people close to the Trump say, and contends the prosecution of Manafort was unfair. Why was he charged with what Trump deems unfair? What was he charged with? During the 2016 campaign, Manafort allegedly shared Trump campaign polling data with Konstantin Kilimnik, a Russian who was the US government said had ties to the Russian intelligence. The special counsel accused Manafort of lying to the FBI about his interactions with Kilimnik, even after Manafort had said he would cooperate and provide truthful information. So that was part of it. Not only did he help Kilimnik gather information about US voters, specifically in swing districts and counties, in swing states, this was really, really pivotal campaign information that was shared with this Russian oligarch, but then he lied about it to the FBI, and that was part of why he ultimately was convicted. In 2018, Trump said, and this was when he was kind of distancing himself, he said, you know, Paul Manafort worked for me for a very short period of time. He worked for Ronald Reagan, he worked for Bob Dole. He worked for John McCain, or his firm did. He worked for many other Republicans. He worked for me for what, 49 days or something? A very short period of time. And then when he was pardoned, when Manafort was pardoned ultimately by Trump, he said this: as a result of blatant prosecutorial overreach, Mr. Manafort has endured years of unfair treatment and is one of the most prominent victims of what has been revealed to be perhaps the greatest witch hunt in American history, which was definitely founded on collaboration and collusion between Donald Trump, the Republican Party, and a foreign entity and arguably an adversary, the country of Russia. But hey, who's counting? Yaz, one thing that I remember that Manafort was successfully able to do in 2016 at the RNC, or 2015, right, was to change the RNC platform with respect to one thing. And if you remember what that was, it was about Ukraine, which said that if Russia were to invade Ukraine, that the United States would not automatically arm and support Ukraine in that war. That basically it would like stand aside, that was the one language. So my dude Manafort, he's been a foreign agent. He has worked on behalf of despots and dictators like Vladimir Putin, and he got his way with the Trump campaign. And now he's back because everybody need money. Russia got money.
Yeah, Manafort is a guy that I really didn't think we'd be hearing about, at least not this soon, at least not in relation to Trump. You know, for Trump, for a guy who's trying to show the world that he's not beholden to Russia or to Putin, he sure loves to associate himself with people who are or have been shown to be beholden to Russia and to Putin. So it is interesting. But of course, we know that his base has never really had a problem with him being associated with people like Manafort. They celebrate people like Manafort. And as we know now, as you mentioned, the right, especially the MAGA right, is, you know, kind of supportive of Putin in his invasion of Ukraine. So it's interesting to see where this is going to go, if any consequences are going to come, any further consequences to Manafort. Because whenever he is involved with a person like Trump, you know, there's a paper trail that inevitably will come out. So they can try to do their things, but you're just kind of putting yourself in position to be further scrutinized even more so than he already has been. And also, I will say, I remember that gout headline, and I'm sure this is 100% just me, but whenever I hear about gout, it feels like something from like the Canterbury Tales or something it sounds like a medieval affliction. I know that it's very current. I know that a lot of people have it, but I can't help it. That's what I think of.
I got a lot of crap for saying that gout was basically, I thought it was when you ate like way too many like chicken livers in a row and you were like you're a rich king and you just ate like duck liver and, you know, pate and oh no, the gout. But no, it's a lot of other people have.
Just in excess. Yeah.
I thought it was like because of just eating a lot of fatty stuff and then having your portrait drawn and like not moving for a long time. Anyway, I'm sure Michael Flynn will be back. Mark my words. And we will be back after this little bit. This has been just the first hour of a damage report. There's more in the aftermath coming. You know what else is coming is the Bituation Room with Francesca Fiorentini. Oh, that's me 1 o'clock, 4 p.m. Eastern today at youtube.com/FranniFio. Get at it. We're gonna be talking about Bidenomics, and Wajahat Ali is also joining me, so don't miss that. But for now, we will be right back. T. Gordon Mayhall Jr., member for 17 months, says, my favorite Texan and my favorite comedian all in the same show, LFG. I mean, there's a lot of Texans. Like, if someone said their favorite California, I'd be like, you're actually lying.
There's a lot of us, yeah.
I think you might be up there in like top three. Like Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yaz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beyonce Knowles, Yasmin Khan.
I feel very uncomfortable being named so near to Beyonce, but thank you. I'll take it, but it makes me very uncomfortable as a Houstonian. Respect to Beyonce.